And I'm Phil Latzman. Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN, our weekly mission to keep you informed on local, regional, state news and issues affecting our community with a panel of the area's top journalists. This week, a return engagement for Chuck Strauss, who is author of the El Jefe column and editor of the Miami New Times. Chuck, welcome back.
Hi, Phil.
Brittany Wallman is, I think, going to join us soon. We're having some connectivity issues with her. She covers Broward County government for the South Florida Sun Sentinel and will join us from her offices in Fort Lauderdale, the paper's offices there, hopefully soon. In the meantime, also with us here in the studio in Miami is Terry Spencer, who is Florida editor for the Associated Press based here in Miami, and a return engagement for you too as well. Sir, good to see you.
Thanks for having me back, Phil.
And Kayloy Henry is an experienced local journalist. She's had stints with the BBC. She's worked all around the world, and recently she has served as a producer reporter for us at WLRN Miami Herald News. Kayloy, welcome.
Thank you.
We should mention that this is her last day with us before she takes an assignment, believe it or not, to work in the South Sudan.
In the very newest nation, yes.
And we'll talk about that a little bit later on. You can join the conversation. Call us at 800-743-WLRN. That's 800-743-9576. We are tweetable at call sign WLRN, and also on Facebook and our website. We have a live discussion being curated by our social media editor, Danny Rivero, and we want to hear from you through that as well. The conversation will continue online even when we get off the air. So we'll begin with this, the Super Bowl quandary for South Florida. There is no Super Bowl in the region's future after the Florida legislature failed to act in time, an election already underway and was called off in Miami-Dade County. The NFL conducted its own referendum on the Miami Dolphins Stadium and shut South Florida out of the process when it awarded Super Bowls 50 and 51 during their meetings in Boston this week. Santa Clara, California will get the Super Bowl in 2016, number 50. They have a new billion-dollar-plus stadium ready to go there. And then the following year, the NFL championship returns to Houston, which hosted the game in 2004 and also has a newer stadium than we have here. Dolphins owner Stephen Ross told the NFL Network, "The lack of renovations to Sun Life Stadium made the difference."
Well, I mean, the vote didn't really surprise me. I had hope because it was really a great bid that was put together. And Miami is a great place. Like I said to the owners, where would you rather be this time of the year but Miami? And I think most people probably feel that way. But that stadium was really definitely the issue.
South Florida has hosted 10 Super Bowls, the last of them in 2010. That's tied for New Orleans for the most. This was not unexpected, though, Terry Spencer, that this would not be the game or either game would come to South Florida this time.
Even as much as the NFL owners like being here in South Florida in February, and who doesn't, would you rather be in Miami in February or in Houston? But be that as it may, they weren't going to give the Super Bowl to South Florida because they have to make a lesson for everybody else, all these other cities, all these other states. If you don't play ball with us, if you don't give us money to improve our stadiums, you're not going to get these prize events. Will it affect South Florida in the future? It could, but we'll have to see. I mean, New Orleans is obviously Tampa. If they want to come to Florida, they can still go to Tampa. They did Jacksonville once. I don't think they're going to do Jacksonville again anytime soon, but Tampa's always still out there for them in Florida.
Ross says he did his best by offering to pay for more than half of the estimated $350 million renovation cost.
I can't do it alone. I think I went out further than any owner has ever gone out in offering to the city to really put up money and deliver, you know, a new modernized stadium. So I think I'm going to have to do it, you know, with local people. I think they'll realize that Miami, the weather alone, won't bring Super Bowls.
Chuck Strauss, did Stephen Ross do his best?
Stephen Ross just lied. He didn't do more than any other owner. The Sun Life Stadium was built, we'll remember, by Joe Robbie, all with private money. Given what happened in Miami with the stadium, Mr. Ross, a billionaire, could have put up his own money to do some of this.
Kayloy, you and I have been covering this in the WLRN Miami Herald newsroom, this saga over the past 3 months, in fact, that you've been working with us. You think this sort of culmination, this is the end of this whole thing, that we won't be talking about this in the future, the lack of Super Bowls coming to South Florida?
I don't think so. I think we'll be talking about this further in the future. I think people are going to go away. They're going to lick their wounds. I mean, when we were out covering this during the early voting, actually voting was split. I mean, for as many people as I spoke to who were saying, yes, they were voting for the stadium because they thought it would bring jobs. We had a number of people who basically would invoke the word Marlins, and they're voting against the stadium. So I don't think this is going to go away.
Yeah, Terry, the Marlins factor here, we saw the early result totals that didn't count, 57% against, 43% for among the early vote tally that, again, didn't count because the legislature didn't take action. But do you think that would have held up in the full vote?
Probably, because people here in South Florida, they're upset about Marlins Stadium. They didn't get a vote on it, and then the ownership of the Marlins promised, okay, if we get this stadium, we're going to build a contending team. Every year we will have a contending team. And then after 1 year, they went and blew the team up. And of course, their argument is, well, we finished last year with the contending team that we thought we'd developed, but there's some people out there who don't think they're even trying this year and for the foreseeable future. Yes, they have some young players, but it's going to be a while before the Marlins can seriously contend, even if these young players develop.
I know. Joining us on the line is Rodney Barreto, who is the chairman of the South Florida Super Bowl Committee, former chairman of the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Committee. Mr. Barreto, good to have you back with us. And you had some pretty strong comments about why South Florida lost this game. Welcome.
Good. Welcome. Thank you for having me, and thank you for inviting me to participate.
No problem. You actually got in touch with us on this, and I know that you were there in Boston. Can you kind of sum up the feeling of the South Florida Super Bowl host committee today?
Well, undoubtedly, you know, we put the best deal on the table to host Super Bowl 50. Our energy was really geared towards the golden anniversary game. We had such a great history with hosting so many Super Bowls in the past. And so that's really where our energy was. In fact, 3 weeks ago when we were in New York, the NFL internal staff literally got up from the table and applauded us for our efforts, for what they saw and what we put together. You know, the reality is it all boils down to the stadium. That was the elephant in the room. We knew it kind of going in. We were swimming upstream on it. And the vote obviously, said that's what it was. So, we're extremely disappointed, obviously.
The Dolphins spent $10 million on this proposed ballot measure, which was yanked off before the State House even took it up. Do you think that if Stephen Ross had to do this all over again, that he would not go through this whole process, knowing, you can't tell the future, but do you think he would have done this again?
You know, my conversations with Mr. Ross is, he grew up in Miami Beach. He loves this community. We often laugh because we say it's the most exciting city in America, and then we correct ourselves and say the world. And it's true because everybody wants to be here. Steve put his money where his mouth was. He got an early indication from leadership that his item would be heard. And obviously that did not fan out the way he thought. Steve, you don't become a multi-billionaire because you dream of things, you know what I mean, in your mind. He obviously was led to believe by a lot of people that he would be heard. It's unfortunate. I actually lashed out to a couple state reps here who have, by the way, disappeared from the media, will not return calls, all of a sudden, conveniently, are all unavailable.
Members of the Miami-Dade delegation who did not support this.
That's correct. And I would love for them to come on and explain why they thought it was so important not just to allow the vote to continue. I mean, there was a vote going in progress. It was being paid not by the taxpayers. They should have allowed the vote to continue.
Hey, Rodney.
Chuck Strauss has something.
Quick question for you. Do you think that Steve Ross should have forked out more money for the stadium renovation?
Well, he put up the last tally or number I heard was 70%. That's more than any other owner I've heard in the whole league. I'm not so sure Steve Ross was, a welcome owner after all those owners heard that, to tell you the truth. I thought he was very generous with what he was putting on the table and the deal that Mayor Jimenez cut with him. He was going to repay the county all the money after 30 years. Remember, this is a bed tax. I mean, this is a tax that built the Homestead Motorsports Complex, the Sony out in Key Biscayne, the AAA Arena. It's not like it's hurting us taxpayers here in Miami. By the way, that tax can be used for two things, facilities and promotion of tourism.
Right. Maybe the idea of an owner spending 70% of his own money to pay for stadium renovations turned off the NFL owners in a sort of a, in a weird way. You know, that they didn't want to have to be committed to it. Well, maybe they didn't want to be committed to paying 70% to renovate their own stadiums to get Super Bowls.
Well, the point that I was making, the point for that was that he was putting his money where his mouth was. I mean, he wasn't hat in hand. I mean, he was putting a lot on the table.
But he obviously didn't convince the speaker that he was forthcoming nor generous enough to get this done.
I can't speak for the speaker. I know that the speaker said that the delegation down here was split. That was led by a couple Baleca, state representative Baleca and Trujillo, who did an incredible job. In fact, I'm surprised that the San Francisco host committee and the Houston host committee haven't sent them a fruit and flowers, thanking them for what they did. But they led the effort here down in Dade County to kill Super Bowls. Now, if Super Bowls are not important, and I think it's really up to the voters to decide if they're not important or not, election, and we should allow the election to take place.
All right, Rodney, before we let you go, and I did want to ask you, when do you think South Florida will get another Super Bowl, if ever, at this rate?
Well, you know, the way it works is that you're invited to participate in to bid. Based upon our two defeats that were just handed to us, I don't believe that we'll be invited back until something happens to the stadium. And I think we're obviously going out of the rotation now. It's unfortunate because I think what's happened with other cities, and, you know, we're almost a victim of our own success. What's happened to other cities, they've taken notice of what we have done in South Florida. And when we have a Super Bowl here, we hire an economist who gives us the numbers and what it means and the multiplier and all that. And everybody sees our success and realizes that It keeps your airports busy, your hotels busy, your restaurants busy, your golf course, your beaches, everything is moving. And then you have a multiplying effect to that, and people have started taking notice. So what they have noticed is what we've known all along. Big sports, big money. It's good for your community. It fills your hotel rooms, your restaurants. It's people in your community, and that's what it's all about. At the bottom line, that's what it's all about.
Well, we could do an hour on this. We don't have that kind of time, unfortunately. Rodney Barreto, chairman of the South Florida Super Bowl Committee. Sorry about the news this week, and maybe we'll have some other stuff to talk about in the future. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for having me.
All right, now I think we have Brittany Wallman. From the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Do we have you by Skype? Are you there?
You have me.
Oh, wonderful. It's good to have you with us. I wanted to ask you, first of all, does it seem a bit unfair that Broward, by law, is unable to pay for renovations to a stadium just below their county line, from which it reaps many of the rewards when big events come here? Have you any of the members of the commission expressed, because they didn't really have anything to lose out of this?
Well, you know, 2 years ago, the Dolphins tried to shop this idea to Broward, and they proposed changing that law that you speak of so that Broward could raise its bed tax to fund renovations to that stadium. And that died on the vine immediately. The reaction was very strongly against it. I don't think that it's ever been shown in Broward that the benefits that you're talking about are really tangible. I mean, that bed tax is supposed to bring in tourism, and does the Dolphins Stadium really fill Broward hotels?
And we'll take one more call on this before we get to the break. Al has been waiting as a member of the Public Insight Network in Cooper City. Al, welcome to the Florida Roundup.
Hi, how are you? Thank you.
Good. So what do you think of all this? You say that the weather is not enough to get a Super Bowl here.
Well, you know, and I agree with, you know, everything that I think everyone has stated so far. In my opinion, you know, obviously the Marlins factor played largely in the vote in Miami-Dade County. As resident of Broward, I was kind of an innocent bystander watching that. But I think that, you know, and I've actually been to Cowboy Stadium in Dallas, and I can tell you that it is simply head and shoulders above Sun Life Stadium, which, you know, I think everybody knows. But in my opinion, you know, having attended a Super Bowl, it's attended largely by corporate interests, and those are the people that are bringing in the big dollars, and they're going to go where those people want to go. And in today's day and age, they want all the buzzers and bells and big, huge TV screens and stadium-wide Wi-Fi and everything else that comes along with these new facilities that aren't currently being offered in Sun Life.
All right. Well, Al, thanks very much for your call and your opinion on this. And there's also the story about the Dolphins possibly moving to Palm Beach, or the Palm Beach County might be interested in doing that. I mean, that's another. Is that silly or is something that's realistic?
It's completely silly. They've spent decades building a fan base here. They earn reams of money here. And the idea that they're going to move, and they have a pretty darn nice stadium. My question is, for everything Rodney was saying, how he's going to pay all the money back, couldn't Ross just do 70% of those, which he was going to pay anyway? Couldn't he just do 70% of the renovations himself? Why does he have to have taxpayers?
Right. Well, he said he didn't want to do it by himself. And, you know, there's your result.
There's a billionaire who doesn't want to do it by himself.
So, and I got to ask this before we hit the break, and we're late to getting to the break. But, Brittany, as long as you're with us, we also heard last week and recently that the Swimming Hall of Fame, which has been an iconic part of South Florida for a very long time in Fort Lauderdale, may be leaving, and in fact, leaving to go to the same place that Super Bowl 50 is headed to, Santa Clara, California. I mean, what's the latest on the Swimming Hall of Fame and staying in Broward County?
Well, I mean, you call it iconic, and it does sound like a great and wonderful
not
place,
iconic then in your
have
opinion.
You been have who had been to it have any of y'all?
I have
yeah, well, to cover okay. a story
saw
all
Greg right. Louganis's well, bathing suit.
Yes. Well, exactly. I think the folks that run that museum have always felt like they were they've never gotten the right respect from Fort Lauderdale. They're really not that many people go to the museum. And I guess Santa Clara is wooing them and making them feel like they would be treated better than Fort Lauderdale has treated them. So,
are they going to have outdoor pools in Santa Clara? Because I've been to Santa Clara. It gets
cold. Yeah. Water is cold.
I mean, Lauderdale is building a new swim complex, so we're not going to lose our pools. You know, we'll just lose that museum that very few people have gone to.
All right. You're listening to the Florida Roundup. We do have Brittany Wallman, Kayloy Henry, also here from our staff at WLRN Miami Herald News, Chuck Strauss from the Miami New Times, and Terry Spencer from the Florida Associated Press. I'm Phil Latzman. It's your show, too. We've been taking some calls, and you can dial us up at 800-743-WLRN. You can also tweet us at WLRN or go to our webpage, WLRN.org, to participate in our live blog. We'll come back and continue the discussion and move on to some other things in just a moment. And we welcome you back to the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Phil Latzman. Our guests once again, Kayloy Henry from our staff at WLRN Miami Herald News. We'll talk more with her throughout the show. Brittany Wallman from the South Florida Sun Sentinel joining us by Skype from Fort Lauderdale. Here in the studio with us as well, Terry Spencer from the Florida Associated Press and Chuck Strauss, the editor of the Miami New Times. And we are reachable by Twitter. It's a good way to do that. You can reach us at WLRN. We all have our own Twitter accounts as well. We'll get to those later. But again, if you're online and go to WLRN.org, you can participate in the discussion being hosted by our social media editor, Mr. Danny Rivero. And that discussion continues long after we get off the air. Now, this week we heard about the tragedy in Oklahoma. It made us all think about the things that we have to deal with here in South Florida. Certainly a different situation, but the superintendent of Miami-Dade County Schools reaching out to his counterpart in Cleveland County, Oklahoma, to offer assistance after the massive tornado there took the lives of dozens of people, left countless others injured, and damaged two schools where many of the victims were children. Here's Frank Zanieri, a Miami-Dade school psychologist and member of the district's crisis management team. He says kids here might also react this way to the awful news from Oklahoma.
Being that South Florida is not immune to severe weather, children who have witnessed via the media the horrific events in Oklahoma have the need to discuss this type of experience with their parents.
So anyway, that's basic stuff there. But tornadoes, Kayla, we found out this week, tornadoes are actually more common in Florida than they are in Oklahoma, but they get bigger events.
Yeah,
so
they get bigger events in Oklahoma. I mean, the thing about tornadoes is that, you know, obviously they're unpredictable. I mean, we get bigger storms, obviously, here, but we get
You can see them coming.
Yeah, you can see them coming for hours, whereas tornadoes, it's a lot more spontaneous. You don't get as much warning. But we do get a lot of tornadoes here in South Florida, but they're just not as big. We get like
Water spouts.
Have you ever been to the old Herald building? You used to see the water spouts coming off during the storms and things like that. So, yeah, we get a lot of them here, but they just never come to this particular kind of amount.
F5s or whatever it was. And Terry, I wanted to mention, but the natural weather disasters are 30% higher increase in the past decade than they were before.
Yeah, and on tornadoes, let's not forget, back on Groundhog Day in 2007, a tornado went across Central Florida through the villages up there, killed 21 people, almost as many people who's died in Oklahoma this past week, and injured 76 people. So we do have killer tornadoes here. They're just not as frequent, and they're not as big. That one happened to go through some trailer parks, places where you're, and it happened overnight. So there was a lot of factors that went into that. But to say that we never get killer tornadoes here, we do. It just not that often.
Yeah, we had one in Sunrise. It was not a killer last year, about a year and a half ago, Brittany. But certainly that was a pretty bad tornado that we saw in Sunrise.
Yeah, although, I feel like we're trying to compete with Oklahoma for
No, we're not. I guess if that's correct, then you're wrong. I should not be taking it that way because there's no comparison.
No.
But, I mean, aren't hurricanes enough?
Right. Yeah. Well, but this is the question. You know, this is a small swath of land that got hit here. Certainly a lot of damage.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's the insurance liability that hurricanes are with the wide swath of damage. But, right. Chuck, does it sort of make the case for the National Catastrophe Fund? Because it's very funny. The Oklahoma sort of Senator Tom Coburn of Oklahoma voted against the Sandy relief package for New York and New Jersey last year after Sandy. There are a lot of people saying, well, this is sort of karma swinging back. But does it sort of make it the case that, you know, disasters really can happen any place, and we need this national cat fund?
I think clearly we need a cat fund like that, and I think clearly we need national rules for insurance. Coming back to Florida, you know, the citizens' disaster or the insurance problem that we have here all could be alleviated with having federal money available.
You're listening to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. Let's move on to state issues. I'm Phil Latzman, by the way, with us Chuck Strauss in the Miami New Times, Kayloy Henry from our staff at WLRN, Brittany Wallman from the Sun Sentinel, and Terry Spencer from the AP. So we'll talk about some Florida stuff. Terry, you edit all the Florida stories coming out of Tallahassee and beyond. This week, we're talking about Governor Rick Scott signing what turned out to be a $74.1 billion budget for the state, the first Florida budget with a surplus in 6 years, but he vetoed $368 million of items from that budget, the most since he slashed over $600 million from the budget when he took office in 2011. Topping the list of vetoes, a proposed 3% tuition increase for universities and state colleges amounting to $46 million. The governor explained his criteria for exercising his line item veto power and why tuition was so important to him.
My filter was this. One, is it going to help our families get more jobs? Two, will it help improve our education system in our state? And three, will it make government more efficient so we can keep the cost of living low in our state? As you know, I vetoed the tuition increase. I worry about the cost of higher education. I know in my case, my wife's case, we didn't have parents that could pay for our higher education. So the cost of tuition was very significant to us.
So Terry, how consistent was the governor in sticking to his criteria?
Well, the tuition issue is interesting because I grew up in California, and in the 70s and 60s in California, the philosophy was is that they were going to keep tuition very low so that – and they were going to pay for the colleges and universities through tax dollars so that more people could go to college. And the thought was is that would improve them economically throughout their lives, and they would then generate more tax dollars back to the state, so it would pay for itself plus over many years. Now, that's gone away in California like it's gone away a lot of places. Scott wants to keep the tuition low here. But the question is, does the legislature and he agree on the philosophy that, okay, we're going to keep the tuition low, but we're going to support it with tax dollars? And they want to keep the tuition low, but I don't think they don't want to support it with tax dollars. So that leaves sort of the universities and the colleges here in a bind. They don't have enough money to compete, they say, with some of the out-of-state universities that are getting more money from the state or getting more money from tuition. So they're getting the worst of both worlds, low tuition and low tax support.
And it seems like education was the big winner after it had been the big loser a couple of years ago, a little more than $1 billion added back to the budget, nearly half of that on teacher raises that will soon kick in. So after the huge cuts in 2011 when he took office, has Governor Scott redeemed himself at all with educators?
He probably has gotten back some of it. I think some of those divisions were pretty deep. I mean, the first thing he did when he came in was cut $1 billion out of education. Now, he will say that he did that because it was at the bottom of the recession. But there, I think there were some philosophical issues in there, too, that the Tea Party doesn't – some of them don't particularly like public education or don't like the direction of public education. They clearly don't like the teachers' union. The Republican Party clearly doesn't like the teachers' union here. So I think there was some of that going on. Then Scott saw the poll numbers. If the Democrats don't have any good candidate, that's another subject. The Democrats really don't have anybody to run against him next year. But his poll numbers are still weak. And if the Democrats could field a good candidate next year, he'd be in trouble. So he's trying to do things that are popular with the masses to get himself back in their good stead.
Chuck, you have been a critic of Governor Scott's since he took office 2.5 years ago. Has he redeemed himself at all in your
eyes? I think the governor's been, as Terry was saying, the governor's been retreating for a year now. He had the lowest approval ratings that a governor had in at least a decade. And his numbers have been, I think, creeping upwards. But the question is, can Charlie Crist, who's probably the leading Democrat, take him? No, he hasn't redeemed himself. I think he's still – now our biggest problem is we have two candidates and we don't know what either one of them think.
And up in Broward County, the most Democratic county in the state, any more sympathy for Governor Scott, especially on a Broward County commission that is, I think, with the exception of one person, all Democrats, Brittany Wallman?
Yeah. I'm sure that's just a rhetorical question because the governor's likability in Broward and especially in the halls of public office here is it doesn't matter what he does. They're never going to like him.
Some of the other items, by the way, a $50 million coast-to-coast bike trail that Governor Scott vetoed. There was $500,000 for the University of Miami that's out of the budget, $1.1 million for a canal on Southwest 57th Avenue, $1 million for Southwest Social Services, and about $750,000 slated for the South Florida Evaluation and Treatment Center. One of the things that was kept in the budget that a lot of the environmentalists are very happy about is the about $75 million for Everglades restoration projects and the buyback program that still remains in there. Moving on to the elections bill and critics of the state, the state's voting laws that led to problems in more densely populated counties are weighing in on these changes, which saying that this is the way it should be. After all, the League of Women Voters is one group that is satisfied. Longer hours, more early voting days are back. So is Sunday voting prior to elections. Here is League of Women Voters Executive Director Jessica Lowe Miner.
Hopefully things will be a little bit better with more access to early voting. There'll be less people who are standing in the lines after the polls have closed at 7 p.m. on election night. So we think that's a really big step forward.
Chuck, are you satisfied that voting problems have gone away here in South Florida?
I think it's going to be a lot better. I think they're talking about more voting places. I think, again, Rick Scott is starting to sound like a darn Democrat. You know, all of the kind of there were attacks by the ACLU saying that all the voting changes put in place for the last election were race related, that he was trying to disenfranchise blacks and minorities. And these are steps that will indeed re-enfranchise those folks who had a harder time voting last time.
All right, before we let's talk about the issue of privatization. Part of the governor's mission is to grow jobs, but he has cut, I think, 3,400 jobs from the public sector in the budget that he signed this week. He told reporters that this is the smallest and least expensive state government in a dozen years when you account for inflation and population growth.
I want to keep the cost of government in Florida as low as possible. My understanding is we have the lowest number of state workers per capita in the country. I'm proud of that.
The cuts will be felt throughout the state, most of them in the Department of Corrections. Being a state and public employee is certainly not what it used to be here in the state of Florida, Terry Spencer.
Well, they're getting their first raise, I think, in 6 years, 5 years, something like that. So yeah, it's been hard. They didn't get their pensions cut, which is something that some people in the legislature wanted to do, but that didn't go through. But it's a tough they have not had it as easy as they used to. The question on privatization is, are you actually saving money? Because we've done some things in AP where we've looked at some privatization programs for example, the Medicaid, and the privatization didn't actually save the state any money. And what was strange about it was, is it was supposed to be a test program, and you'd ask them, well, do you have the numbers to show that this is how this is doing? And they really didn't have any numbers to back up anything that they were pushing. So privatization does work sometimes. It does save the state money, but sometimes you wonder if that's really the goal, or is it to push, get rid of government workers and to put it into the private hands, things that had traditionally been done by public workers.
And one other note on the governor before we take a break. He's leaving. He's, in fact, left the country for his eighth overseas trip, trade-related trip in the past 2.5 years. He's in Chile this week. He's previously visited Brazil, Spain, Israel, England. He'll be in France next month. That's already more trips than former Governor Charlie Crist took, and on a pace to match Governor Bush, who spent 2 terms in office, and he defends them as a way to drum up business. And his expenses are picked up by Enterprise Florida, which uses private donations for these trips. So is this a big deal?
Well, the state Supreme Court has said that it's ethical for a private corporation who lobbies the state government to pay for the governor to go to Chile and France and England and wherever else that he wants to go. So I guess it's fine. But if I was writing a story about somebody and they were paying my trip, AP would have a problem with it. But government is what government is.
All right. You're listening to the Florida Roundup here on WLR. When we come back, we'll talk about some more local and regional issues. We have Urban Beach Weekend coming up, which either will elicit a series of responses from people, and we have some of those. We'll also talk about some Broward County issues and some things that are in the Miami New Times this week. And Kaloy Henry will tell us about her adventure that she's about to embark on to the South Sudan, of all places. I'm Phil Latzman. You're listening to the Florida Roundup. We're back in just a moment. And hello, we welcome you back to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Phil Latzman, Chuck Strauss from the Miami New Times, Terry Spencer from AP, Kaloy Henry from our WLRN Miami Herald News staff, and Brittany Wallman joining us from Fort Lauderdale with the South Florida Sun Sentinel. All right, before we go on, though, I know everybody wants to give out their Twitter addresses because everybody on this panel, except for Kaloy, you're not active on Twitter, but we'll do that when you get to the South Sudan. We'll have you set up one. Terry, what's your Twitter account?
At Terry Spen.
Terry Spen, so just S-P-E-N.
Correct.
Terry Spen. Chuck, yours?
I got a couple, mostly at Chuck Strauss and at Miami New Times.
At Miami New Times. And Brittany Wallman does a significant amount of tweeting on her beat covering Broward County.
I do. I love to tweet. I tweet mostly from at Broward Politics, but also at Brittany Wallman.
All right. And I'm at Phil Latzman. We also have our at WLRN account. And if you're there, we do a lot of tweeting from that as well. So we've got Urban Beach Weekend coming to South Florida. And some people are cheering. They're on their way down here. I've seen a lot of them already on the beach. A lot of cops out on Miami Beach. More than 250,000 people expected to pour into South Beach and the Miami Beach area over the Memorial Day weekend. And while the city itself braces for the partying throngs, police are going to be out in force to make sure things do not get out of hand. Kaloy, if you're going to Miami Beach this weekend or surrounds, what should you know?
Well, you probably should know that there are going to be a lot of street closures. Ocean Drive is going to be closed. There's going to be a big loop that's going to take in Washington and Lincoln. So do be careful. Starting from 7 p.m. this evening, it's going to be very slow getting over the causeways because the police are enacting license plate checks. There's also going to be a lot of DUI stops and just a huge police presence. 400 police officers are going to be out on shift all the time from different agencies. All of this has to do with the fact that, you know, what happened in 2011 when there was that horrific shooting that happened. So they're looking to try and step up police presence, step up making the neighborhood feel safe. But obviously, it's going to have some effect, particularly on business people. They're wondering if all this police presence is going to frighten people away. Are they actually going to come? Are these street closures going to affect people being able to get into particular businesses? And I mean, hotels are already reporting that some of their occupancy rates are down for this week. One said that they're down by 70% than the last time. So it is having an effect on businesses as well.
Chuck, this event every year has a negative connotation for some, and for others, it's an excuse to come down here and party during a holiday weekend. But obviously, there have been incidents. There was an incident 2 years ago in which as Kaloy mentioned, Raymond Harris, police shot him 16 times. About 4 a.m. on Memorial Day, after he says he was driving erratically, refused orders to stop. And we've had issues before that. Even it seems like a bad mix, and just everybody's on edge during this weekend in Miami Beach.
Well, I think a lot of locals are on edge, and it's really a pain to get around there. But I am really concerned, and I think our columnist Luther Campbell has written a bunch of times about the conception around the country that Miami is a police state, particularly among African Americans. Mm-hmm. And I think with this kind of police presence, like Kaloy was talking about, that we're confirming that, and that's not a good thing for Miami. It's a lot worse than not getting a Super Bowl.
Yeah, and what the ACLU, in fact, is so worried about this perception and the fact that Urban Beach Week is basically, this police presence is basically seen as an infringement, that they're actually urging people that if you have any complaints or if anything happens, to email them to their website, and they're actually going to have ambassadors walking around Beach Week to basically sort of keep an eye on things.
A lot of restaurants are closing, right, and they have in the past. I don't know what they're going to do this weekend, but closing because they say the partiers come and they just ditch the bill and they run out. How you kind of classify whether or not that's overt racism or not, I mean, that's the thing that people look at and go, well, is it just because these people are a certain color that they don't, but they say these people are walking out on the checks, but it certainly creates a bit of racial tension that usually is not there.
Well, it creates racial tension because a lot of the people who attend Urban Beach Week are of a particular particular ethnic minority group, so there could be that particular perception. But they're young people; they're going in to have a good time. People used to go to Fort Lauderdale, for example, for spring break and where the boys are. And then Fort Lauderdale worked very hard to get rid of that image, and now are seen as a bit more genteel with all the new bars and everything that have opened up. Miami Beach hasn't done that. I mean, they maybe not have welcomed everybody for Urban Beach Week with open arms, but they still are welcoming them, and that is something to be said.
Yeah, Brittany, that brings you in there up in Fort Lauderdale. Fort Lauderdale shed its Where the Boys Are image a long time ago and kind of shooed away visiting revelers. Has it helped up there?
Well, it definitely worked. I mean, the redevelopment is extremely high end, and you still get 10 to 15,000 spring breakers, but you're not really tiptoeing over barf on the sidewalks like you used to. But something kind of neat is happening now, and that's, I think the Mayor Seiler is really into boosterism and celebrations and parties, and they kind of went in that direction with a big beach festival recently, the Tortuga Beach Musical Festival, over a couple days. And since it kind of went off with no big affair, I think you might see them going in that direction a little more. But I might suggest a gigantic Super Bowl beach party broadcast nationally, and the folks in San Francisco can eat their hearts out.
I think that Broward County should start a campaign, Broward and Palm Beach start a campaign during this weekend to lure visitors from Miami-Dade who don't want to be there for Urban Beach Weekend.
Broward is throwing more. We have a big listing on the New Times website of Memorial Day events and beach events this week, because Broward, I think, or a bunch of clubs have figured out this is a great weekend to lure people up there. So they have more than we've ever had before.
We asked Miami Beach residents through the Public Insight Network and people who work there whether they'd be leaving or staying. Hank from Miami Beach writes to us, he'll be leaving because, quote, generally bad behavior, loud noise, and lack of respect for private property. Also, many businesses closed due to the fact that you can't get certain services. Most of these due to lack of organized or focused activity for guests to the weekend. We talked about why businesses close, but Armando from Miami Beach says he's staying because he lives there, but he'll be trying to avoid the madness. He says two people were shot a block away from his house a few years ago. I woke to a semi-police state with armed cops doing a dragnet through the neighborhood and helicopters flying all over the place. And John, also from Miami Beach, says the main problem is traffic congestion. The traffic during Urban Beach Week is crazy, and if you do leave with your car, it's extremely difficult to find parking. Again, that's why my wife and I refused to move the car for that weekend. So there are some thoughts there. from folks. And our producer, Alicia, she's staying put because it's good people watching, which I guess, you know, that's one way to look at it. But others, who knows? All right. So one quick thing. Speaking of Miami Beach, the convention redevelopment project, it could be said, Chuck, that Miami Beach is the gateway to South Florida. The people come here and spend time on Miami Beach more than any other place. That's what they know. There's a convention center that is aging 20 to 25 years old. And we talk about Super Bowls and spending money on Super Bowls. A lot of people think that this is what people should be spending money on. And now there's a couple of proposals, $1 billion to renovate the convention center. Does this get done? And could this be the linchpin of improving South Florida, not necessarily improving stadiums?
Oh, this is the most fascinating redevelopment battle in decades in South Florida. You got two firms, Portman CMC and Ace, fighting against one another, involving big developers like Ugo Colombo, who's the guy who built the biggest building in Brickell, and they're fighting over this $1 billion program to basically redo the whole area, add greenery, add apartments, and change the whole nature of the Central Beach. And if it gets done, and if there's a reasonable hotel there, it's going to change the whole way we think about South Beach. And I think it does get done. I mean, I think it's a fascinating and great battle and could really change South Beach.
I know this is not something, Terry, that you're too up on, but when it comes to a place where people go, certainly Miami Beach is that place. It's the center of tourism for South Florida. So in a way, you have to think about it. You have to wonder how much attention it's going to get.
You do. And what's interesting is about a year ago when I was on your show here, we were talking about, is South Florida's economy coming back? And we were talking about, we're seeing these little dribs and drabs of construction that are going on here and there. And now all of a sudden, everybody wants to build again. So I guess we are coming back. And that's got to be good news. Is it going to get back to the levels that it was in the early 2000s? Remains to be seen. But it is interesting that we've gone through the condos that, you know, we thought we were going to have these huge surplus of condos for a decade, but we've run through those. It's maybe the economy is turning around here.
How about up in Broward, Brittany? I mean, we just saw today that I guess the Broward real estate price is up 20%, I think.
Yeah.
And so, and that seems to be the story around the region, but do you get that same feeling where you are?
Yes. And, you know, the property values are coming out soon, and we're going to find out that in Broward, the values increased in every single city up to 4 to 5%. That's a first since the recession hit. That's great news, except for, of course, it means that you know, like you said, home prices are going up, and I think we can expect to see taxes going up as well.
All right. Before we wrap up, a couple of things here we have to get to, and one is that you're, Chuck, holding the copy of your publication this week. Thomas Kramer is a name that sounds very familiar to those who've been down here for a long time. You have to see the picture of him in his underwear holding up a building on the front page of the Miami New Times. But Thomas Kramer is a name that people know in Miami Beach, perhaps the most important developer of South Beach, and in a kind of a bad boy image. He just lost $200 million judgment, now has been forced to sell everything, even his watch collection, and you've detailed that in this publication this week.
Indeed. It's a great story by Lara Gavin, who used to work for Mr. Kramer. I mean, he was the bad boy. He represented South Beach in the late 80s and early 90s in all of its big spending, big living, big ways. And you know, he built Portofino Tower, which is the big sort of building that you see whenever you go to the beach. And now he lost in a family lawsuit, he lost more than $200 million. And how his decline has happened is detailed from the inside by Ms. Gavin, who worked for him. And it's a great read, a wonderful story.
And there's another great story about the state shortening yellow light times that is in the Miami New Times that you'll have to check out as well, about the fact that they have shortened the yellow lights possibly without telling people so that they can get more people on camera running red lights.
Yeah, the state legislature 2 years ago excised three words, whichever is less, from a law which allowed them to shorten yellow light times, which means, everybody who's listening, all those red light tickets you got, they screwed you.
That's where a lot of people feel. Yeah, Brittany, you want to jump in there?
I'm waiting for this whole red light camera thing to come to its a quiet conclusion. I give it about another 5 years.
And you, by the way, one of the big issues in Broward, before we let you go up there, but the funding for the Broward Sheriff's Office now under the new sheriff, Scott Israel, wants a lot of money to fund BSO. Is he going to get that from the Broward County Commission?
Well, he is a Democrat, but that's not why he's asking for a humongous budget increase. He's the new sheriff. He asked for a 14% increase, and because looking at that increase in property values that I was talking about, and people are starting to see, oh, good times are coming, maybe we can start spending again. But no, the county commission, the pain of the recession and the cuts is still fresh, and they said, try again.
All right. On a final note here, Kayla Henry has been a part of the staff only for about 3 months, but I invited her on today just because she's been so helpful to us in everything that we do on the air here at WLRN Miami Herald News. And she has quite a story to tell. She's been part of the media for many years, worked with the BBC. She came with us sort of a gift left on our doorstep here. We knew it was going to be not a lot of time to spend with her. She's moving on. You're going to be moving to a completely different place.
Completely new country.
Yeah. So what are you doing to us? Why are you leaving us?
Because I'm going to be working for a media development project in South Sudan, the newest nation in the world. As you know, Sudan was having a civil war for the past more than 20 years. They finally came to a comprehensive peace agreement. And one of the things was to have a referendum for the southern part of the country to secede. And they said they wanted to. So in 2011, the new nation of South Sudan was created. They need a lot of help with a lot of different things, including media, including radio. They have a number of small radio stations. They have very eager journalists who are just longing to be trained. And so I'm going out there to help them do that.
How does a girl from South Florida decide to move to the South Sudan? And are you worried about your safety?
I'm an adventurer. As my mother once told me, I was born with itchy soles. So I go. And a little worried about safety, but, inshallah, I'll be okay.
But I guess it's not, we've heard NPR and the world do coverage of this about how media is still in its burgeoning form in parts of Africa, and especially in new countries like South Sudan, where they don't really understand the role of what the media is supposed to do.
That's very true. One of the big problems in South Sudan isn't just the fact that about training journalists, but it's also training the government about how you deal and respect journalists. There's still huge problems in the country with regards to journalists being jailed or being punished for writing particular sorts of stories, and the government not understanding that being questioned by a journalist isn't tantamount to treason. So it's basically training people to how to do your job in these kind of very tough situations, as well as educating the government to allow people to do that sort of thing.
Well, on behalf of everybody here at WLRN Miami Herald News has gotten to know you over the past 3 months, thanks for everything you did for us.
No problem.
No problem. Terry Spencer, quickly, final word, anything you're working on there with AP that we can expect?
We have a story coming up looking at hurricane insurance rates, a very popular topic always in Florida.
Absolutely. Hurricane season starts next week. We'll, I think, next Friday be talking a little bit more about that. Chuck, we heard your stuff in the Miami New Times.
Well, and there's Terry McCoy, one of our staff writers, has written about a cult up in Vero Beach that has a 30-year history, involved movie stars and Arlo Guthrie, the folk singer. And it's a stunning tale, and you guys are interviewing him soon.
Next week, I think, on WLR, and you'll hear that. And Brittany, last word for you. What are you working on?
I've got a project coming out in the Sunday paper about towing abuses.
Towing, Tucker. Yes. That's another visceral topic here, yes, in South Florida. Brittany, right, Wallman from the South Florida Sun Sentinel, Chuck Strauss from the Miami New Times, Terry Spencer from the Florida Associated Press, and Kayloy Henry from our WLRN Miami Herald News staff. Thanks, all of you. Great show. Good to have you. And that will do it for the Florida Roundup this Friday, May 24th, 2013. Should wish a happy birthday to my wife, Jill. Love you. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen to it. How to do that? You listen to it on the show, on these airwaves tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. You can also post it on our website, WLRN.org. We're produced by Elaine Chan and Alicia Zuckerman. Thanks to Steph Farrow, Jackie Skevin, Danny Rivero, Peter J. Meritz, Dan Gretsch, and Paul Leary at the Control. South Florida Arts Beats next on Fridays. I'm Phil Latzman. Stay informed, South Florida.